play action on first down. As Winston throws to the end zone, it is caught. Touchdown, Elijah Moore.
Jameis Winston extending the play, gets out there, and Elijah Moore gets behind the secondary. Both feet look like they're down inbounds for the touchdown for the Browns.
Going to talk about Elijah Moore a minute here. Jonathan Peterlin, 92.3 The Fan, joining us on the Western Hotline. Jonathan, good morning. You know what? In Cleveland, I want to say, it's always interesting in Cleveland, right? Lately, how many years in a row? The Browns used to be the factory of sadness and drought like the Bills, and the Bills have become much more interesting. And I want to say at least the Browns have become a lot more interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. On my show in Cleveland, we had a guy that like came on and did mock drafts with us basically every week, and like he was our draft guy. And he was like, "Wow, I mean, that was just like the most interesting draft ever." It's like, no, that's like a Thursday through Monday for us. Like, yeah. That's kind of what we get these days.
Two quarterbacks trading down from number two.
Yeah. I mean, five quarterbacks now. Well, one's hurt, so like, a four-way competition coming.
Before we get to Elijah Moore, what's the feel on? First on the quarterback room and how that whole thing played out now that Shedeur Sanders is in the mix.
I mean, so it worked out pretty great for someone like myself that likes Shedeur in that there was so much pressure. They took him at number two overall, and people would have expected him to be a top five quarterback in the league, you know, something that comes with being the number two overall pick. As a fifth-round pick, you just get to see what you have. And if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, now we have two first-round picks for the 2026 class. So I think people are pretty positive overall. More importantly, though, this season was going to suck, guys. It was going to absolutely stink. And now at least there's some intrigue. There's some interest attached to it. Even if it ends up stinking at the end of the day, Shador's interesting. I don't know that Dylan Gabriel's necessarily interesting. But between him, Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco in the mix, like it's going to be a fun training camp into what at least isn't just an unwatchable regular season.
Is there any fear bunkering or sadness about no Travis Hunter? Because when Joe and I were talking about it, you might have a bad season, but watching a player like that might be really exciting, and the Browns, of course, stepped out of that.
So that's one of the funnier things to come out of the week, is that leading up into the Travis Hunter, into the actual draft, I kept hammering to people, like, you need to pay attention. Andrew Berry doesn't speak this way about people. He's calling him the Ohtani of football. He doesn't speak that way. Like, this isn't a thing that he ever does. And so I was like, just be careful, because there's nobody that loves playing with the media more than Andrew Berry. And so he did exactly what he's done historically here, which is just pull the rug out from underneath people. And that's how it worked. But yeah, Browns fans were kind of upset. I myself was kind of upset. But I like Mason Graham. I like getting another first round pick. Ultimately, just the draft got this team interesting, and that's all I care about.
Smokescreen season there in Cleveland on Hunter. Jonathan Peterlin joining us on the Wester Hotline.
So, do you want to get to Elijah Moore here, Jonathan? He was in for a visit yesterday. We had an eventful day talking about wide receiver, and then it came out that he's in town visiting. And that's a player that I'd like going back to the draft, but you can look at the targets. You can look at that it wasn't that efficient. What do you think the story was for him in the last 2 years in Cleveland, and whether a team acquiring him would be getting something that could be meaningful?
So pretty forgetful, if you maybe like describe it as quickly as I possibly could. Pretty forgetful. There's not many things that I thought to myself, like, Elijah Moore stood out. He was good for a couple games a year. Last year it was the Denver game, Baltimore game. And the Denver game was really overshadowed by Jerry Jeudy having 215 yards receiving in that game too. I'll say this. I don't think he's been given a true fair shake of it when you look at the quarterbacks the Browns have had over the previous couple years. Having Watson play as often as he did, and then going into whether a combination of Flacco or even last year Jameis Winston, but prior to that, Flacco, P.J. Walker, and DTR, like, he's been given nothing as far as quarterbacks are concerned. I actually thought he was a better locker room guy than what he was always perceived to be as with the Jets. Like, I talked to people, they liked him in that locker room, but at one point last year, he was suspended for disciplinary reasons for a game, and we never found out what that was. And there was just so much chaos, so much everything happening. Browns were never going to tell us. I never found out, which is it's like a rare thing to not have somebody be like, hey, so this is actually what happened. It just never really happened. So I can't speak on that, but what I do know is that the people in the locker room did like him. It wasn't like a problem, and the way to encapsulate the 2 years was just pretty forgetful. Yeah. Like, 5 years from now, I will not remember a single thing Elijah Moore did.
How about deployment and skill set? Like, what type of player, where he was when they did use him?
Yeah, so they tried to get him, you know, with the deep ball, but it just never, again, I want to be like, oh, he was a deep ball threat, but he really wasn't. It's not like he was hauling down any of these catches. Now, again, were there times where he was open and we just had bad quarterbacks and they just missed him? Yeah, that did happen. For sure that happened. There was definitely plays where I'm like, oh, Elijah Moore could have had a good play, big yardage there, and it just never materialized. Do I think he'd be a 1,000-yard receiver with the Bills? No. No, I don't. But I do think Josh Allen makes everyone better, but Josh Allen would make him considerably better. But I think the concerns you'd have to have with him is less about what you expect from a talent perspective and more about what you'd be getting as far as around the team and the player himself. And in the 2 years he was here, he had that one hiccup that we still don't know what happened there. But outside of that, I mean, I'm telling you, he was much better than he was with the Jets. When we got him from New York, Jets fans made it seem like he was the biggest diva, and I didn't experience that.
All right. Well, enjoy this season. May it be interesting.
For now, enjoy the Cavs for now, right?
Yeah,
at least
that's
you
right.
Something fun
that's
for,
right.
for a while.
Yeah, well, you know how the sports world works. It gives us something to balance it out with. How about that win last night? It was just absolutely insane. So we'll enjoy that. Yeah. And I'm going to enjoy Shador Sanders just giving me a bunch of content.
Yes.
Very good. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, guys.
92.3 The Fan, Jonathan Peterlin on the Browns, and a little bit on Elijah Moore there. One thing about the deep ball, it is missing, has been missing from this offense for multiple seasons. I mean, Diggs dropped the one in the playoff game. That was a deep ball that was there.
I was looking back. I was looking for a stat that I had on the deep ball during the break, and I'm searching through Twitter. And if you know now, searching through Twitter is like, it's impossible because everything's so jumbled. I found an article I wrote on our website from 2023 right after Dorsey got fired, and I had a series of numbers about how, like, yes, turnovers was the story, right? When Dorsey got fired, they couldn't stop turning the ball over. But if you looked deeper at the beginning of that year, the big play disappeared. Remember that? Explosive plays were just missing in action from the Bills' offense. And last year they did return, but they were not, like, they were runs, right? They were James Cook runs and a couple of Allen runs and a couple of, like, off-script plays where he's throwing it deep to Shakir. But it's really been two seasons in a row now where you don't see guys running open down the field. If you are seeing a play like that, like Mac Hollins in the AFC Championship game, it is Allen having to make a perfect pass. He can't miss by even an inch because otherwise it'll be incomplete.
Jerry in New Jersey is back with us. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for taking the call. So, you know, just trying to think about what's been going on the last couple of days. And I think a big point is being missed on why Bean was seemed defensive yesterday. And everyone is kind of backing into their default positions. And both sides are right. There is a definite lack of top quality receiving depth on the team. But then Bean is correct that you don't really need that when Allen is running the offense. So then you look at why the Bills have lost all the playoff games in the last 4 years. And it's clear that the main difference is the Chiefs have Chris Jones, the Bills do not. So if we play kind of this game, what if Von Miller doesn't get hurt, but Chris Jones does? The end of the game obviously is different. But I think the big factor that I think is overlooked is how bad Brandon Bean has been in identifying defensive line talent. And that is critical because unlike the other positions where they actually do get low round draft picks, where they do pick up street free agents and the guys do play well, that has not happened on the defensive line. So when you take a look at the rogue cast of characters that have rotated through one Bills drive, the defensive line has been very, very bad. And he has spent a lot of draft capital, a lot of free agent capital on people who just have not performed. And I think that to me is part of the reason he's been defensive, because, you know, he brought up the year they drafted Russo and Boogie. Well, Boogie was a bad pick. And if you remember what he said after the draft, they actually had a trade in place where they were going to pick up more draft capital, but they loved Boogie so much that they stayed in place. Well, that's, you know, emblematic of just, I don't know if it's the team structure, I don't know if it's the drafting, but they just have not been able to hit on those defensive line picks.
Yep.
And I think that's part of the reason he might have been a little bit defensive, because there really is I don't know if you could point to a single draft pick that you could say, you know what, that guy overplayed his draft pick, whether it's the first round or any of the other rounds that they've done. When you look at the free agent.
You mean on the defensive line?
On the defensive line, yeah. Because almost every other position, we have players who've clearly outplayed their position in the draft or in free agency, but not on the defensive line. That is one position where you cannot point to maybe one or two guys, but that's it.
Yep.
This is in 8 years of drafting.
Thanks, Jerry. I think that's a really good point, and I like just spinning through it. If you're to label all the Bills draft picks that overplayed their draft status, where they got picked, you won't find a single defensive lineman, and I think that's right. Who did Harrison Phillips? Who did? Who outplayed? Because if you want to get to linebacker,
it wasn't Milano.
Got Milano. If you want to say Bernard, maybe. At defensive back, I've got Benford.
Yep.
Safety, they haven't had enough picks at safety to really do that. But
you don't really have a good answer to this.
No, you don't have a good defensive lineman that outplayed their draft status. And you know, Rousseau has played like a number one pick. I guess you'd want to say he's one of the best in the league. To outplay that draft status, that might be tough. To the point about, you know, defensive tackle, again, like this is where yesterday's reaction was, all they talk about is receiver. That's all they do, and that's not reality. One of the things we said going into this draft was, you want to know what position they actually undervalue? Defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Two picks from the Ed Oliver draft till this last weekend.
Right.
Two. Ed Oliver, Dwayne Carter. That's it.
They doubled it.
We said, do they value the interior to defensive line? Will they pick that guy in the first pick? Because we never see boards. What we do is we look and see, what have they done over 8 years?
Mm-hmm.
And over that period of time, defensive tackle has not gotten attention. It's actually been more neglected than receiver.
And actually, especially this one technique role that everyone has been talking about all spring, that role, there is literally nothing. It is
Star Latulale and then nobody.
It becomes who's available in November.
Yeah, Linval Joseph.
Right, Linval Joseph, Quentin Jefferson coming back, Jordan Phillips coming back like three different times. Like these are all bigger body. Jefferson might not be as much, but one technique, big block eaters that they just bring in at the middle of a year, and they're fine.
People want to act like it was just a wide receiver fantasy football obsession. That's not what it was. It was, I look at what you do, and you place value on running back quite a bit. Cornerback, I think we see that.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive end, we definitely see.
I mean, is anybody disputing right now, at the very least, can I make it about one position group versus wide receiver? There is no dispute. They value right now offensive line more than wide receiver. It's the first position he talked about yesterday when talking about the hierarchy
him.
And like you can't have everything. And the first thing he mentioned was his offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
They have prioritized in the last 2 years, we need to build Allen a great line.
And they have done that.
And they have. They definitely have. And it has value. I mean, their run game is, to me, the biggest reason. I mean, Cook, I don't want to take all the credit away from him. The biggest reason their run game is good is because their line is good. And same thing, like Allen avoiding sacks is a huge reason why that happens too, but he has time back there. So it's not even to say that it has gone poorly. It hasn't. Good thing they succeeded in it.
Yeah.
Right? Like the line was fueling, I think, last year a lot of why they were top two in the league in points.
803-0550 and 1-888-552-550. That's our phone number. It is Tuesday after the draft. We got our 60-mile-an-hour winds yet, or 50.
No, it looks beautiful out right now. I mean, it looks fine out there.
It's coming. I saw Pat Hammer tweet there's going to be a couple different shots of like mid-morning and then late afternoon, so it's going to be a stormy kind of day out there. What else? We'll get some more calls in here. I had something that popped into my mind as our last caller was running through those guys to out-draft their position. He was talking about the Basham trade. It was right on the tip of my tongue.
There's a lot of receiver reporting about, sorry to go back to receiver, but not about the Bills, the Cowboys this morning. There's a report that they, in the building, might want to bring Amari Cooper back. That's the first thing I've literally seen about Amari Cooper all offseason, about anybody being interested. And then Diana Rossini was tweeting that they've been in on George Pickens trade talks, but they're not maybe right now, exactly post-draft, but that they were in on George Pickens, who I still want to predict is going to get traded. Pickens. And the Cowboys have a need.
Larry in South Florida. What's up, Larry?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Yeah, I called really to, you know, offer you some support on yesterday, Jeremy. It was unbelievably uncalled for. As you know, I've listened to your show every morning, and I call a lot over the years. And I listened up until 8 o'clock, so I didn't really hear anything with you and Sal. And the only thing I heard yesterday, which was factual, that you said, and there was nothing wrong with it, was that we don't put a high priority on wide receiver. We don't. And there's nothing wrong with that. And if Brandon Bean is listening, I hope he is, because I want to ask him this question. You guys and us as fans, now, we are the ones paying the money. I paid money to fly from Florida to Buffalo, like many people did, to go to that Baltimore playoff game, and was actually considering going to Kansas City. But think about what happened in that game. We had the ball with a lot of time left, down three, and you give it to Josh Allen, and you think, great, we're going to win this game because Josh is going to open it up. He's going to be wide open. So then Kansas City knew we had no downfield threats. We had none.
Yep.
We didn't have speed on the outside.
Rich, Larry, yeah. I'm gonna jump in here because this is the thing I was thinking of. I have this page open on my browser. So we love to look at the final drive. They're down 32-29. I want to get to the drive when they have the ball and the lead. It is the third quarter. It is the third quarter late. The Bills have the ball and the lead.
Okay.
This is when Allen gets stopped on the 4th-and-1 and the controversial ruling and all that. Here is the drive. Cook for 4 yards. Cook for 9 yards. Ray Davis for -1. Allen sneak for 0. Allen sneak first down. 1st and 10 at the 50 with the ball and the lead on the road in the AFC Championship game. Cook for 2 yards. Pass short for 5 yards. 3rd and 3. Pass short for 2 yards. 4th and 1. Turnover on downs. You can this to me, again, like, if you think it's unfair to go this deep in, I think that's what you've got to do when you're this good. We scored 30 points a game. Talk to me about that drive. Your biggest play was a 9-yard run. You passed the ball on that drive 5 yards short, 2 yards short, and you ran 3 sneaks. One thing about the tush push, one thing about all the sneaks in that game and how the Bills went 3 for 6, 6 times, including third down. They're like, we just got to get the first down. We just got to get across get the first down.
Right.
And there's a defense to make of that, but if you had someone on the roster that Kansas City's got to be like, watch out, they're going to go for the kill shot. They weren't even thinking of it. They were thinking of, you want to say this is McDermott, you might be misguided. They were thinking of 2 and 5 yard chunks, and they got a 9 yard run. And then on the touchdown drive, like when they're down 29-22. What happens when they're down 29-22? Cook for 9. Allen, pass to Cook, 23 yards. There's a big one. It's a short pass, though, to Cook. Cook around left guard for 2. Allen to Ty Johnson, short, no gain. Allen deep middle to Hollins, 32 yards down to the 4.
A great pass.
Yes, it was. They had multiple great passes to Mac Hollins. What I'm getting at is here, if they could build an offense that's pretty much exactly the same but is a little more capable of opening up those shots down the middle that they hit to Mac Hollins.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a little different. Their offense had short plays and shots to Mac Hollins in that game. So, and Mac Hollins is gone.
Right.
That's the guy that Allen grew to trust. He was a great story about this. He led them in touchdown catches. So, and by the way, the guy in the end zone on a 4th down Herculean effort. No, sorry. That's James Allen. Allen to Curtis Samuel.
Yeah. The Cook run was earlier.
Yes. 803-0550. So I'm looking at...
Am I still with you?
You are. Sorry, Larry. My bad on that. Two drives in the second half of the AFC Championship game with the game in the balance. On 2 of the 3 drives, there was nothing happening downfield for you. And the one drive that you got a shot, to Hollins is the one you scored on. So I'd be looking at how can I go to Kansas City and score on those drives more effectively. The answer is maybe I get more of those shots to the Mac Hollins guy. Maybe that's not Mac Hollins. Anyway, go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, so the caller before myself and you really touched on some of the points, but back in that draft when we got Rousseau, we turned around, we needed receivers desperately, and they were there to be had. The question that I have two questions for Bean, if he's listening. Number one, why would you go ahead after you just addressed defensive end? And Rousseau's a good pick, no doubt, and get Basham, but again, that's too late. What I want to know right now from Bean is we didn't have any speed on the outside in that Kansas City game, and it really cost us. Now, if we have speed, it's on the practice squad. What are we doing? Bring them up. Use them for the playoff game. But here's the better question. After what he said to you about, you know, what's wrong, we have the receivers, what's the problem? Well, Brandon, if that's the case, why do you have Elijah Moore in? Why'd you bring him in for a visit? Would I love Elijah Moore on this team? Yeah. Is he fast? Yeah. Can he be a downfield threat? Yeah. But why, after making those comments that he made to you guys yesterday, does he bring in Elijah Moore the very next day? Because you must know, Brandon Bean, because you even said it, we need to be faster, that we need speed. I think he missed the boat last year. I think he should have gone an all-in and gone up to the middle of the first round. And I don't know why. I can never remember his name, but I love this guy. The receiver that Jacksonville got, the rookie number 7.
Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, revisionist, that looks great, Larry. Thank you. You know, to the point about Elijah Moore, the Bills had talks with him before the draft. And then, of course, have had talks with him, and he was in for a visit post-draft. He said, Josh, can you pull up that clip from Bean talking about Elijah Moore? Put a pin in it. Because I want to get the quote, and then I want to try to, you know, lay out the timeline of what is most likely to have happened. Mm-hmm. Okay? So Bean on Elijah Moore's visit. This is on One Bills Live yesterday.
Elijah Moore is here. He's a guy we've spoken to a few times leading up to the draft, and we just kind of put a pin in it, just like we did several other positions, and said, let's wait till the draft and see where we're at, see if he's still interested. If we took a guy in the first or second round, he's probably not too interested, but we didn't, and so we picked up those conversations over the weekend. He and his wife came up today and visited, and so we'll see. Nothing imminent today, anything like that.
One more time. Go back again. One more time. Hold on. That sneak by us?
Yeah, wait.
One more time. Brandon Bean on Elijah Moore. Paul, I want to be able to stop and start it as we go.
Elijah Moore is here. He's a guy we've spoken to a few times leading up to the draft, and we just kind of put a pin in it. Just like,
keep going.
Like we did several other positions and said, let's wait till the draft and see where we're at, see if he's still interested. If we took a guy in the first or second round,
stop.
He's probably.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Okay.
It was possible that they were going to do it.
To take care in the first or second round.
The whole thing.
Keep going. Finish it out.
Yeah.
We're not too interested, but we didn't, and so we picked up those conversations.
Hold on. Let's see if we take a guy in the first or second round.
All right.
I know he's not like, that's not a binding agreement, but it's just, it was entirely possible.
Right.
So the whole thing is funny. We'll look back on this and we will all laugh. I'm laughing. We're all laughing. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Because there really
He thought we were trashing his draft. We weren't. And we all thought like, hey man, I thought they might get a receiver. And so did he. And he didn't. And now he might call Elijah Moore back in and he comes in for a visit again. And here we go.
Right.
We put a pin in it.
Right.
In case we draft
in the first or second round, because right, if you just listen to the way he sounded yesterday, you might think, oh well, that guy, listen to how he sounded, he would never have drafted a receiver in the first or second round. You would have thought Moore would already be here.
No, I guess he's like what he's doing is defending his board, which every GM is allowed to do that.
Right.
All right. That slipped by. We played that clip earlier. I did not hear. Put a pin in it in case you take a guy in the first or second round.
I mean, there is an alternate universe, I guess, from this past weekend where there is. I mean, if the first round is interesting, though, because first or second round, maybe he means more second round. Who could have fallen to them in the first round?
Golden.
Golden?
Could they have taken Golden if he fell?
He's the only, well, McMillan, I guess, too, but it's the other one, but McMillan falling to 30 was never realistic.
It's also not as simple as which receiver falls. They're there in the second round, and they think, like,
well, right, if
we like T.J. Sanders.
Right, if Hairston had gone already, and they, maybe they wanted corner, but same thing, like, this is the whole board conversation, that corner went more than they thought it would, and there just wasn't a guy there they liked. So they end up picking a receiver.
So everything's possible.
Golden Tate, right? Like all of this is why the draft is so fluid, and it's, you know, the value of it,
right? Which is makes it so strange to say that the conversation of the bitching about adding at receivers the dumbest argument.
Right, right. That's the two parts. There is you were open to doing it in round one and two, at least to some extent, even if it wasn't your biggest need, but it, to some extent, open to adding to it, and also it's the dumbest argument that you can have. Two things don't equate.
Right. And maybe that's maybe, you know, again, he's allowed to say whatever he wants and come in with fire. Maybe what he's basically saying is, yeah, I mean, I could have, but the board didn't do it, guys. To which a GM
who is running his
process, like, okay, I believe you. I do believe you. Us asking about it, you're saying, like, I would have done it, but it never lined up. Well, okay, I never got to see that it didn't line up. I'm just asking, man, it really never lined up, huh? That's kind of a surprise. Anyway, 803-0550 to join us. Okay.
You've got me watching back some of these plays from Chiefs-Bills, by the way, in the AFC Championship game.
And?
I noticed something from the James Cook run.
Which one?
The one at the 1 yard line, fourth and goal at the one. They've got a score, and he makes an unbelievable effort.
Yeah.
You know why he has to make an unbelievable effort? I don't want to be super nitpicky about all this, but
I'm going to guess I already know the answer. Go ahead and tell me.
The two players, they split out wide that the Chiefs only put one guy on, and the defender that Cook gets by has bailed on his man because he feels run and coming the whole way. Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid are the two guys out wide. And the Chiefs only put one guy on each, and the guy covering Knox bails like right away because, I mean, he's probably not that worried about having to cover Dawson Knox in one-on-one.
803-0550.
But Cook makes an unbelievable effort, and it still is an incredible. I hope it doesn't get forgotten because it is an I still can't believe he gets in here. Josh looks stunned that he gets in the backfield even.
Don't we all just love the Bills? I do. We all do.
Yes. This all is just figuring out we just want them to win it.
Everybody does. Everybody
and does. Some people disagree with others on how they will win it or what gives them their best chance to win it.
All right. Hey, it's been a good morning. Go Bills. I've got trivia next and some phone calls. But good trivia. Fun trivia.